Have you tried changing your health year on year, resolving that this year things are going to be different, but nothing seems to change? Oftentimes, when things are not changing, we are following many wellness myths and not looking at the full picture, including our nutrition, recovery, stress management, leaving out mind-body connection. I want to introduce you to Wellness Redefined, a new podcast from Rufilion Media that's here to dispel all your myths about wellness and fitness while sharing stories of how we've redefined what it means to be healthy. On each episode, we'll be talking to experts from all walks of life who will share their own unique wellness journey and offer their perspective. I am your host, Tamika Rochester, founder and CEO of Harlem Cycle, a premier wellness space in New York City with a focus on indoor cycling. I've been an advocate for wellness since as early as I can remember. So if this sounds like something that could help change your life, go ahead and pause the show you're listening to and subscribe to Wellness Redefined on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Inclusive Collective, where we share stories and learnings of inclusive people, organizations, and innovation. I'm your host, Rob Hadley, a people and culture strategist specializing in DE&I and people analytics. I'm here with my friend, Nadia Butt, an organizational development and belonging strategist. Nadia.
Hi.
Tell me.
What?
How are you?
You know what I'm doing? I'm doing okay. It's been a little hectic week, I feel like.
Yeah?
Well, yeah.
What? You mean the start of the week?
Yeah.
Already?
Yeah. Mondays are just so crazy, I feel
so
like.
So we come out of President's Day, and so the thing that I was thinking about was like, do you have a favorite president?
Well, I did. I did, and his name was Obama, and then I decided that he's not. So yeah. I don't have one right now.
Decided that he's not. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a curious holiday, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It really is. Like the meaning behind it and so forth. Like, yeah, it's an interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a suggestion that we should make the NFL season longer. And then 1 week longer, have the Super Bowl, and then everyone gets President's Day off and, you know, get all the, right? Everyone gets a chance to recover. What do you think?
Do people get President's Day off? Is that like a holiday that...
For sure, kids do, right?
Like... Kids do. It's like the beginning of public school. I think it's the beginning of like spring break, winter break, right?
Yeah. Well, in some places, but yeah, no, I think people get presents. So what you're saying is you're not having a big like celebration, people over to the house.
No,
you know, let's wear like an Abraham Lincoln top hat and walk around. No, nothing.
No, definitely not that. Why do you do that?
I just wonder if anyone does. Does anyone do this?
I don't know anyone who actually like observes President's
Day. It's a skiing holiday, right?
I think we're going to ask our listeners if you actually do something on President's Day to observe it, please email us and let us know what it is.
There's no
one. Well, we'll find out.
Everyone goes skiing.
Please let us know. Everyone goes skiing.
All right, Nadia, what do we got this week?
Well, this week on Inclusive Collective, we'll be talking to Dr. Fadia Nordtvedt. We'll discuss Wisconsin's new constitutional amendment banning DE&I, Disney's character unionization. We'll also be raving about Princeton's president's defense of diversity, and we'll rant about a rideshare Valentine's Day strike. But first, let's get to the deep. Rob, you're up.
Let's talk about Wisconsin, one of my favorite states, the Dairy State.
The Dairy
State. Have you been to Wisconsin?
I've been here a couple times. I used to work in Wisconsin.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Great. Great place.
Yeah.
Their legislature's a little Looney Tunes, though, right? We're going to talk about Disney.
Just a little bit.
But the Republican-led legislature there passed a constitutional amendment. They're very serious. Banning DEI. The measure has, of course, no chance of becoming law because the governor is a Democrat, Tony Evers. Yeah. He won't sign it. So it's more of a... They're making a big show of it. One of the things that was curious that I did want to talk about the notion of what they want to replace DEI with. And it's something I heard last year at this crackpot HR conference that I went to here in Utah.
Oh, okay.
They're talking about merit, fairness, and equality, right? This is their counter movement.
Yeah.
And so we're going to talk about this later, the idea that merit is the antithesis of diversity, right? That is
right.
And, you know, what diversity does is lower quality, right? So, and the merit you know, they even say explicitly that merit may create less diversity, and that's okay, right? They're very upfront about it.
Okay.
I just want to get your thoughts on merit, fairness, and equality as a counter movement.
Oh, that's a loaded question. Here's the thing. When you sent this article, I was like, okay, this is just another state trying to like make moves here. And what I found interesting, so like this proposal really talked about particularly like the universities and local school districts, mm-hmm. right, from discriminating against or granting preferential treatment to anybody on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin. And then it went on to say that it requires hiring decisions to be based on merit, fairness, and equality, a term conservatives have used as a counter to DEI. I mean, what's funny is that no one is arguing that. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, let me back up here. So, like, what you'll find people challenging you is, like, when you're actually hiring people, you should be hiring from a wider pool of candidates, right? Typically, you're not. And so I think that's where, like, the hiccup is, and people just don't have really a true understanding, or they do and they just want to, like, create noise. But I did do a little investigative journalism, and that's just what I do on my wow. on my downtime. I went down a rabbit hole, and according to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, so the EEOS, as of 2023, this federal agency that investigates in particular workplace discrimination receives on average over 80,000 complaints per year. Mm-hmm. Just in the state of Wisconsin, that's almost 1,000 per year. And that was based off of 2023. So yeah, it's a problem when you aren't hiring people with fair and equitable discriminative practices. And anyone who denies that is super lame. And honestly, I'm just over this conversation. But yeah, go ahead, Rob.
Well, I think it's dangerous in terms of setting it up as, right, like as an either or, right? So like all these notions, even, you know, merit, fairness, and equality versus diversity, equity, inclusion, like to some degree are based in things that we all value, right? Like sure. in some way, yeah. and the issue is they're defining these terms on their own terms, right? Like they're yeah. saying this is what it means in employment. This is what it means in education. So it's just a dangerous, and it just, you know, and the intention is to muddy the waters so mm-hmm. that, right, like people just kind of throw their hands up in the air and say, I don't know what is right, what is the best thing.
Right.
And you think about EEOC complaints, it's really, you know, by some estimates, only about 1% of people file complaints for things that yes. are either harassment or discrimination.
Right. And they're not even captured fully. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, So thanks for doing that deep yeah. dive as well.
Sure.
I do think that we'll see a lot more of this. I think term is something that you're going to start to see in talking points. And yeah, I think that right. you have to be ready to counter it with actual evidence.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Rob. And honestly, I'm reminded of our conversation a few weeks ago that we had with Christian Heyman, right, of Ali Heyman. And he specifically pointed out that, like, Rob, you might be the best candidate for a job, but the fact that we haven't opened up the pool to someone like me or Farhad, like he was painting this picture and saying that you may have the capabilities and skill sets for the job, but are we actually widening up our pool of people to find the right candidate to add to our group and build those diverse workforces. Right. And so I think you're right. We're going to have to continue to define and clarify and explain, because unfortunately those that are really trying to paint this like broad picture or broad stroke around what, you know, these terms of merit and equity and fairness are painting it in a way that really builds resentment from someone who might be considered someone who has a diverse skill set or diverse thought or background. And then that continues to perpetuate that there's a norm, and the norm is this white, able-bodied, typically male, cisgendered, right? Like all of these things that are the quote unquote norm, which aren't. So like, I'm really over it. So over the like conservative push on this, but Yeah, thanks for that article.
Well, let's talk about Disney. What do you got for us?
Cartoon characters, great segue. So, according to a recent Reuters article, performers of cartoon characters, so characters like our Mickey, Donald, Goofy, right, at Disneyland theme park are looking to join Actors Equity Association, a labor union representing those who work in live theatrical performance. Disney will be required under federal law to sit down with equity's representatives at the bargaining table and negotiate a contract following a vote in favor to unionize. The union is seeking to represent the 1,700 Disneyland employees in the characters and parades departments at the park. Any reactions, Rob?
Well, you know, I think it's great, right? Like, I have to, I do have to tell you, Nadia, like, I know Goofy. I've seen him try to keep it together. Okay. Even on the simplest tasks, and he's an absolute disaster. I've actually eaten at Goofy's restaurant in California. Have you been to any of the
Disney? I've never been to Disneyland. I've only been to Disney World.
Not great. Chef Goofy. Not great. Not great.
Really?
You know, so
like, doesn't cook well, or what's the deal?
I mean, if you've just seen him, he's just he's kind of a klutz, right? Yeah, okay. He's just kind of a mess, right? So let's keep him away from the negotiating table. As you were saying that, I was actually envisioning like Disney characters at a negotiating table with, like, you know, Bob Iger of Disney or something like that. Yeah. So, you know, I've been doing a deep dive as well on anti-discrimination regulation.
Investigative journalism.
And I wouldn't call it that. But, you know, one of the interesting things is that the drop in enforcement of those employment regulation, the enforcement, coincides very nicely with a drop in union representation in the 1980s, right? So union representation, as a percentage of workforce, continues to decline. So, you know, I think all unions are a good thing. You know, I just don't think they matter at scale, right? Like, I don't think you can turn back 30 years of declining real wages and massive income inequality. So it's not really a solution for larger societal problems, but I think it's great in this case. And, you know, we'll see if it matters for these folks.
Absolutely. You know, when I think of like unions in general, like, I think most of them are just seeking, like, for the most part, just a fairness and equity, particularly like equity and compensation. And I think of Disneyland, like, the cost of living in California is like wildly outrageous, right? So again, these folks are really just seeking a livable wage, and I don't think that's an unfair request. So that's my story for this week.
All right. Go Mickey, go Minnie, and be careful with Goofy. All right, folks, that's it for the deets. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Dr. Fadia Nordfit. Stay with us.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
Welcome back, folks. This week on Inclusive Collective, we welcome Dr. Fadia Nordfit. Dr. Fadia is Assistant Professor of Communications at Springfield College and holds a part-time faculty researcher and consultant position at NYU. She is the co-editor of an academic special issue journal on diversity, equity, inclusion in collaboration with University of Milan. Dr. Fadia is founder of Collaboratively, a company that provides research talks, workshops, and trainings. She's written several books, and her work has been focused in places like Financial Times and Boston Globe, just to name a few. Dr. Fadia's research areas are DE&I, and she has created a system of organizational inclusion called the Inclusive Business Model Canvas, IBMC, which I'm excited to talk about, that aids in building an inclusive foundational structure. Welcome, Dr. Fathia. We are so grateful and thankful that you are able to join us to speak on Inclusive Collective.
Well, thank you so much, Nadia and Rob, for having me on your show. I can't wait to talk more about IBMC and everything else you want to know more about.
Well, we want to know about it all, so we'll get started there. Dr. Fathia, it's a pleasure to meet you. Thanks again for being with us. So listening to Nadia do the intro, you teach, you do research, you're active in sustainability, right? So how do all these things fit together and how does it all inform the work that you're doing today?
So I think as far as I'm concerned, all of the hats play a very big role in putting the thread of sustainability and DEIB together, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. My teaching and my research are heavily connected to the consulting work that I do and the authorship and the productions that I do, because if I don't do research, then you can't really go out and do consulting. According to me, those are connected. Mm-hmm. And how do you build expertise? And I have the privilege of teaching students of all levels, undergraduate and graduate, on things that I love and that I'm passionate about. So it's all fitting together really well and informing one another.
I love that. Tell us a little bit about your background in terms of what excited you to get into this field of not just DEIB, but also sustainability.
So that will probably be a much longer and interesting answer, some positive and some negative, as all stories. I would say the sustainability journey was something that was in me from when I was a child. I grew up in a family and a household where there was a lot of caring and information and just generally a lot of attention paid to issues of environment, sustainability, natural health, well-being. Organic farming, all of that. And as a result of it, I think I grew an appreciation and respect for nature and environment, and sort of I understood the value of the connection between humans and non-humans and the environment that we live in. So that was sort of the segue into sort of the running theme of sustainability in my life. As I continued in my sustainability journey in my formal schooling, like in my graduate school for my master's and then into my PhD into different areas of sustainability, and I wrote my book, my second book called Participatory Networks and the Environment out of Routledge, Taylor & Francis. And then I also ran a nonprofit related to what I wrote about in the book called the Be Green Project, all of which was about sustainability and the environment. I realized that you can't really solve sustainability problems without actually looking at the core issues of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. Mm-hmm. If you haven't been living under a rock, I'm not being condescending here, everyone should know this by now, that climate change and environment sustainability issues cannot be solved the same way for every community around the world. Mm-hmm. The way it impacts a white male in a privileged neighborhood in an urban city is very different from the way that, say, a woman of color from a rural community in the global south experiences the same issue of climate change. Right. So really, if you look at the crux of and the focus that we need to put on solving sustainability and climate challenges, we really need to understand the way in which structural DEIB works out. And therefore, that was the aha moment. I realized that while I'm always going to be interested in the environment, sustainability, wellness, all of that, really what I care about the most underneath it all is finding structural shifts and changes I could make to DEIB challenges in the world, because that is at the core, according to me, of solving sustainability problems. Mm.
Yeah. We were talking about Wisconsin earlier, you were talking about people living potentially under rocks, and they're certainly not all living under rocks in the state of Wisconsin. But I was just thinking about, you know, they've passed a constitutional amendment saying that, you know, we can't actually teach DEI, right? Obviously, in a lot of places that have severe environmental challenges, they're working very hard to ignore some of the principles of diversity, equity, and inclusion, belonging. And so how do you lift that rock for folks and connect the two in places like Wisconsin?
I wish that this type of thought and thinking was just limited to Wisconsin. I understand that I'm based in Western Massachusetts in the Northeast, and quite unfortunately, the figurative rock exists in the Northeast as well. Mm-hmm. Some people just talk about it and make state laws and try to pass laws about it. Mm-hmm. And some states are trying to do it behind the scenes, and or they have attitudes about it that really emerge in classrooms. And I feel professors feel that strongly because you're interfacing with people in a very active way from very different backgrounds in classrooms. And I have met climate deniers in classrooms in Massachusetts.
Sure.
And this is Massachusetts. Like we're talking about one of the most progressive states that you can think of in the United States. However, to answer, I'm a very solution-based person. So it's never easy. But what I like to do is go back to my understanding of how important it is for us as a community to understand what is good data. And I often in my classroom like to practice the process of letting my students actively know what is good and scientific data, and how do we actually work with data that is not laced with subjective realities that our families and friends and our neighborhoods have come up with just because we grew up with a certain religion or culture or whatever. Mm. So I think I actively try to work with lifting that issue in my ecosystem, whether it's in my classrooms, in my consulting, in my workshops, whatever I do, through going back to the point of let's look at data. Let's look at what is good data, what is not good data, what defines good data, and try to make people understand that this is not about us being left or right or Republican or Democrat. It's about how do we make our way through what we consider good data, how is that created, and what is good data telling us about all of these issues?
Yeah. Dr. Fadia, you're speaking Rob's love language right now
with the data. Yeah. The data piece, it's so important, and the subjectivity within data. Yeah, absolutely. And so just to segue, you had created the Inclusive Business Model Canvas. And I personally just, you know, love the model and kind of what it holds. Curious, like how can this model be served in particular in organizations, businesses, if you think about industry and how to kind of practice that?
I love this question because there's so many ways to answer it, but I'm going to try and today pick on two or three things to focus on. So first of all, I'm a woman of color. I came up with a model on inclusion, which is structural. And I wanted to create something that is inherently logical, that is devoid of emotions. I understand there are strengths and weaknesses to that because I do respect research that is done on affect and emotions because I think it's very important to do work on that. But throughout my life, because of my visible identities, I have been always boxed in things that I don't care to understand why I'm boxed in them. Mm-hmm. And therefore, what I decided to do was, hey, racism, discrimination, bigotry are all supercharged, emotional, irrational things. Mm-hmm. So how do I build a model that addresses very common sense type of way? And it's really important for me to build something that looked at the structures of different departments across organizations. Every organization has multiple departments.
Right.
So often, if you're big enough, you have multiple departments. You have branding, you have finance, you have the human resources, whatever it is, whatever it is that you have going on. And I wanted to build a model that actually pays attention to the complexity of larger organizations and looks at the way in which, again, we can use data to solve these problems and empower people in different departments within organizations to use and collect data that can help them to build more inclusive systems within the very sometimes contradictory departments within a company or an organization. So my model was built to solve a couple of things. I wanted it to be structural, because I didn't want it to be more of like a one-on-one thing where I sit down with you, Nadia, I train you, and then you're like, oh, I'm gonna be in a coaching session where I will learn how to be more anti-racist, and then we have 8 sessions, and then I leave. Yes. Instead, I wanted to coach you to see how your department or your organization can build systems in place to address the issue of inclusion in a more structural way so that it's just beyond, it's more than just you changing in the process. It's people around you, and also there's capacity building around issues of inclusive change. The second thing is the emotional part, which is because I'm a woman, there's a lot of sort of, a lot of women do DEIB work because, you know, they're moved to it from an emotional place. Sure, I am moved to it from an emotional place because I'm a human being who feels that other human beings should, including me, should be treated well. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, again, it boils down to the best use of data. And I feel data can be used well for the benefit of others. And my method teaches people how that can happen.
Dr. Fadi, just to follow up on that, it sounds amazing. I'm excited to dig in. Who is the method for? Does it require leadership, at the senior most levels to really take hold of your model and drive it and implement it? I think about some of the power dynamics at play in terms of cross-functional execution, right? And getting people to talk to each other across the organization and in terms of being able to have the right data in order to drive some of this. So is the method something that can only be advanced if you have leadership involvement?
So that's a great question. It's designed for managers, mid-managers, leaders, and C-suite board folks, and as well as board members. The reason being that, as we know, in larger organizations, the culture is often created from the top, and if your CEO and managers and all of those folks who are in the power dynamic of creating the culture and system that the company runs is on board with it, oftentimes we see a lot of changes. It's not really working the same way in maybe grassroots movements, because I feel this model could be taught to startup type. When I do my trainings, I have done it on nonprofits. I've done them on startups. I've done them on corporate audiences that are very different corporate identities, like real estate versus luxury, like various different sort of audiences. Mm-hmm. And same with nonprofit. I've done it in educational as well as nonprofit, like social change, multinational sort of nonprofits type of thing, saving mm-hmm. the world, etc. And so I feel the audience could be diverse, but really it's designed for leaders of either mid-level to high-level leaders that can train departments, because it's the best use of time and resources for a company, for, say, the marketing director getting my training and then saying, all right, now I'm going to create and implement a plan, a 5-year strategic plan for my marketing department to see how this can be used to become more inclusive in the next 5 years. Right. So it's very good at goal setting. So the good part of the inclusive business model canvas is it's designed for 3 capacities. You can collect data, so you can actually use it to do research. Hmm. You can use it to also scope out like your action plan going forward, and you can use it to do implementation as well of the plan. So it's designed for three different aspects of the 3 stages of collecting data, scoping out what should be good, and then actually implementing what you are coming up with as being your pathway forward.
Wow. Love it.
That's fantastic. Dr. Fadia, you are quite a busy person, because in addition to being a professor and a researcher, you are and a writer and kind of all these many kind of hats you hold. You were also the producer of a public access television show called Talking Out of Line that highlights DEIB and S, trailblazers from diverse industries, and you are starting your season 2 productions. Tell us more around like the mission and goals of this program.
So the mission and goals of this program couldn't be more relevant in the election year, because the season 2 is focused on coming up with 6 educational videos that I want to keep free and open access to whoever wants to have good data-backed videos explaining what is diversity, what is equity, what is inclusion, what is belonging, what is intersectionality, and what is sustainability. So I want to make 5-minute videos explaining each concept that's open access. That is, like I said, going back to the beginning of our conversation, using good data, so that when people are poo-pooing things like DEIB, you can point them to a really good resource that almost acts as a peer-reviewed academic source, only in multimedia 5-minute format, explaining to them where the data is at when it comes to this. That's the goal.
That's great. What are you excited about?
I am excited to produce this new format because the first season was a much longer, more traditional talk show model format, and which was great. And I met a whole bunch of amazing leaders in DEI leads from different industries. I was very fortunate to get guests that were very, very diverse from very diverse fields, but quite predictably and unfortunately, everyone had the same sort of systemic observations. It seemed like the whole reason why I started the show was to show the patterns that systemic issues are plaguing every single industry that we know. So anyone who is not paying attention to that is, again, living under the rock. This becomes the
Wisconsin. We're talking to you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad. Exactly. I'm glad that you pointed out it was a figurative rock, because if people haven't been to Wisconsin, they may think, you know, the way I described it, that there was an actual rock. It's a lovely place if you've ever been there.
Great cheese. It's cold. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll definitely get folks the information on how to check out the program, also, you know, your book and some of the research and some of the models as well. But, you know, so you know, thinking of all the things that you do, can you give our listeners one resource that you would recommend, you know, for DEIB and sustainability? What do you think people should be paying attention to right now?
So I can't help but say this, that I am, my training is in media communication. That is my background in my master's and PhD in the field that I come from. And one of my favorite areas to do work and teach is on media representations. I think I wouldn't want my audience to go to one resource. I'd love to point them out to our streaming platforms and that we have, that we all seem to have, Netflix and Amazon Prime and whatever else, Hulu, that we have. And I encourage people to engage critically with how many changes we can notice in mainstream media since 2020. In the way in which our shows are made, who's playing the lead roles, and start being mindful about the narratives and stories that are about to change. I do think that our media is going in the right direction when it comes to streaming platforms, becoming more inclusive than it was 20, maybe even like 5 years ago, pre-George Floyd. So I think I would request and urge the audience to start engaging critically with what they're watching every day in their homes, in Netflix and Amazon Prime or Hulu or whatever, Apple TV that you're getting, and really start seeing the reasons why those stories are being told now more than they were ever before, and why companies are investing on telling stories that were never told before. So I think that would be my message to everyone.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that with our guests. Well, Dr. Fathia Nordvedt, thank you so much for joining us on Inclusive Collective this week. It was a great visit. I hope you do come back.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you all. It was amazing. Time flew by.
It did. Yeah. 20 minutes goes by really quickly.
Most people don't say that. They say this was really painful. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back for our Calm Reflections and Raves and Rants.
Welcome back, everyone, to Inclusive Collective. We just finished chatting with Dr. Fathia Nordvedt. Dr. Fathia, as her friends call her, since we're now friends with Dr. Fathia. Nadia, yeah. Good time.
She's really fun doing a lot of different things, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely interested in checking out some of the models that she was talking about, and I think they fit really well with some of the stuff that I do as well. So very cool to have her on. I do hope she'll come back, because I'll have more questions about some of the things that she's doing.
Totally. I love the intersectionality that she's focused on with diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, and sustainability.
I know. I got a little sidetracked. I was too into the sustainability stuff.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. You know, she's been focused on that work for a while, and I think her research is really, really interesting. And she's, you know, she also works really heavily with the youth movement, the global youth movements, and then I just love that she's really in tune with like the technology and communications and really encourage. I love that last bit where she's encouraging us to be a little bit more critical of who we see on, you know, some of these streaming platforms as lead roles or producers, even writers, right? So it's good work.
Absolutely. All right, Nadia, let's round things out. Are you gonna rant first?
I am going to rant first. So okay. Last week, Uber, Lyft, and DoorDash drivers had their largest strike ever. This was on Valentine's Day. And you know what they're doing, Rob? They're really just like seeking your basic labor protections. So these strikes took place in over 40 cities across the U.S. They gathered at airports, protesting low wages, protesting lack of transparency and pay equity, and then concerns about abrupt account deactivations by the apps. So while some companies are required to, you know, abide by minimum wage laws and provide healthcare benefits for employees, gig workers like some of these folks lack this same safety net that must really rely on corporations voluntarily improving their working conditions. So, you know, again, just looking at these corporations to provide a livable wage to people and maybe some benefits, maybe like have some compassion, maybe they make a ton of money. So just, you know, just ranting about how some of these folks have to go out and protest instead of actually go make a living because some of their corporations don't provide them the support that they need.
Absolutely. I 100% support that. I saw in the notes the Valentine's Day rant and I was like, oh, great. Me too. I mean, I'm on board. The part with Uber and Lyft, I'm definitely supportive of their efforts. All right, let's round out. Let's rave about, and it kind of comes full circle. So I did want to rave about a letter to the Princeton community from the president, Christopher L. Eisgruber. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but it was reprinted and excerpted in the Atlantic Monthly. It was titled, "Elite Universities Have Not Sacrificed Excellence for Diversity," as we were talking about earlier. And so I don't know if you have a chance, but I recommend it. It was really thought-provoking in that, you know, we've been talking a lot about higher education and DEI across the U.S., and there have been a lot of these viewpoints expressed that what's been happening, you know, with regard to social justice activism from students is just out of control, right? And I don't spend a lot of time on a college campus anymore, regrettably.
I do.
But yeah, that's true. You do.
I do.
But you hear, you know, in my circle, I hear people like, you know, Pivot host Scott Galloway, or even like mainstream voices like Fareed Zakaria saying the DEI is this problem, that, you know, debate, which used to be so great on college campuses, has been cast aside. That we're seeing social engineering, and you're like, I just kind of shrug my shoulders and I'm like, oh, it must be pretty bad, right? But then you think about how the same argument is brought up in companies around diversity hiring, and how, you know, and it really is just a repackaging of that meritocracy myth that we were talking about earlier, right?
Right.
This false choice between diversity and excellence. You can have one or the other, but you can't have both. And so Mr. Eisgruber mentions there's always been social engineering on campus, but it's usually been at the expense of those that are underrepresented. So I thought it was a great point and really well written.
Princeton.
Never thought I'd say Girl Princeton, but there you go.
Yeah. I know, right? Never thought I'd say that. Very cool, Rob. Well, thanks for sharing that. And from what I understand, you have an upcoming workshop this week.
Yeah, this Wednesday. So coming up very quickly, the February 21st at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific. I'm doing LinkedIn Live with our friend Aparna Ray and her Data Love Show. It's an audio only event. So that's really the best way to enjoy me, as we all know. We'll be discussing the need to go back to basics and leverage and enforce regulations and laws intended to create diversity in a time when companies are pulling back on their DEI investment. Nadia, you're gonna join us?
I'm going to join. Going to tune in Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 Eastern. And that's on Wednesday, February 21st, correct?
Yeah.
And people can sign up on LinkedIn?
On LinkedIn. Yeah. All on
Very
LinkedIn.
Very cool. Well, we'll make sure that we'll share that link as well with folks.
All right. It's going to be fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that, Rob. So that's it this week for Inclusive Collective. Just a reminder that if you're looking for DE&I and workplace culture strategy consulting, problem solving, or training, you can reach out to me at Nadia@nasconsultants.com and Rob at TakanoConsulting.com. Inclusive Collective is a production of Refilia Media and edited by the one and only Ari Mathay. We would love to hear from you folks, so please send us your feedback at inclusivecollective@rotelion.com. You can find us on LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Be sure to follow us on LinkedIn so you can subscribe to our Inclusive Collective newsletter. If you like what you heard, please be sure to subscribe and rate us if you like 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks again to our guest, Dr. Fadia Nordvedt. We'll be back next week. Be well. Rob, did I ever tell you that I went to Disney and did like a tour underground?
You did a tour underground? Was it like the DEI stuff?